the world entirely is at war.
Troops waiting for the zero hour.
This is D-Day.
They got one.
Veterans Chronicles. For the next hour, join host Gene Pell and an honored roster of heroic soldiers, sailors, and fighting aviators, recalling and retelling their personal stories from World War II.
A state of war.
To the present day.
Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Now the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network present Veterans Chronicles with your host, Gene Pell.
Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of Veterans Chronicles. B.G. Burkitt served in Vietnam with the 199th Light Infantry Brigade in 1968 and 69. He was awarded the Bronze Star Medal. He is now a military researcher and historian in Texas and has devoted more than a decade looking into hundreds of people who have fraudulently awarded medals to themselves for valor in Vietnam. They include the nation's highest award for heroism under fire, the Medal of Honor. Mr. Burkitt is the author, with journalist Glenna Whitley, of the book Stolen Valor, How the Vietnam Generation Was Robbed of Its Heroes and Its History. And he joins us this week from Texas. Mr. Burkitt, thank you so much for being here.
Well, sir, thank you for having me on.
Well, it's hard to know where to begin, given the magnitude of your work and the meticulous detail of your documentation, but let's start with the atmosphere of the times and the attitudes of too many in the country that provided, at least it seems to me, part of the breeding ground for some of this fraud, corruption, and deceit of such scope. And I speak of the disgraceful way our returning vets were treated when they came home.
Well, I'd tell a few of those stories, personal stories coming home. I got on an aircraft, still had my uniform. I'd actually been discharged, but I was taking that last flight home, and there was some drunk on there who just started, harassing me unmercifully during the entire flight right across the aisle. Nobody said anything to him. He was calling me a drug addict and a baby killer and cursing me, and it just went on and on and on. And I got out and went back to graduate school, and the last semester I was got an interview at a bank in Atlanta, and they paid for the flight to come down here and everything. And the fellow I was going to be interviewing with was a vice president, and he had a stack of resumes, and he obviously hadn't read any of them because he, read mine while I was sitting there. And he stood up, tore my resume up, threw it in the trash can, and told me to get the hell out of his office. He wasn't hiring any GD Vietnam veterans. It had nothing to do with my academic record, the fact that I was an officer, or anything else. It just, there was that atmosphere. So, what most of us did, we just quit bringing the subject up. We just went on with our lives and, didn't look back. But
well,
I got involved in an effort to build a memorial here in Texas, and that's what got me sort of back into that venue again. And that, of course, was an experience all unto itself.
Well, the media certainly played a major role in perpetuating this image of the drugged-up, alcoholic, baby-killing psychotic, warped forever by the trauma of war. But one thing I find ironic is that so many of the cases you write about of people claiming heroic service would go to such lengths to make others think they were Vietnam vets, highly decorated ones at that. I know the motivations were many, self-aggrandizement, greed, gilding the lily among them, but where were the media when it came to exposing the frauds for what they were?
Well, it's interesting. Our society, think about it, during that period of time, who made it into the press were the heroes and victims. I mean, those were the two types. And by claiming that you were a Vietnam veteran war hero, you played both roles, mm-hmm. because you could be whining about post traumatic stress and Agent Orange poisoning, and then on the other hand, I've got three Purple Hearts, etc. And these reporters would just gravitate to those stories. I've got several cases that are not in the book, have happened since, of congressmen and senators awarding these medals to these individuals, having a big ceremony and the press covers it and everything else, and I would get the man's military record and unequivocally prove that he'd forged the whole thing.
Well, I've read case after case. I've read the whole book. But the entertainment industry, by the way, was no less culpable in its depiction of Vietnam vets as the television, radio, and newspapers were.
Well, you know, you look back at those old programs. Of course, I mean, I'm in my 60s now, but during that period of time after we got home, you had all of these programs, these detective programs like Mannix and, you know, some of the others. And the second there was a character in the story who was a Vietnam veteran, you knew he was the bad guy. You know, he was the guy importing drugs. He was the guy smuggling in slaves or whatever it was. That just became the theme of the Vietnam veteran. Mm-hmm. And you think about it, you know, some of these things like I'm going blank now, but like the characters then that became positive Vietnam veterans were actually kind of dummies. Or like Magnum, who was just, you know, kind of a happy-go-lucky detective kind of guy, you know. Mm-hmm. But they were never portrayed as really being heroic in any way or patriotic.
But as far as radio and particularly television were concerned, they went out of their way to find the people to put in their programs who already fit the preconceived image.
No, absolutely. I you know, show several stories in the book where I can prove guys like Peter Arnett just made stories up in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that one about we had to destroy the village to save it, that
right.
was a Peter Arnett story.
Right, right.
And, you know, the village, I mean, of course, he used the word town actually in his story. The anti-war movement changed that, but it was Bentree, which was a 50,000 populated city, modern city, you know, paved streets, French architecture and everything else, and 100% of the damage to that town was done by the enemy. There were only 12 American advisors in that town, and all they had were small arms to try to defend themselves.
Right.
And yet he portrayed it as, we wiped this whole town out. It didn't happen.
Well, another striking thing about the tales that you recount is that even when you went to a newspaper or a television station, local or a network, and showed them documentary proof of their error, they didn't do anything about it.
No. They, as a matter of fact, they would often attack me verbally. My book, I couldn't even get a publisher to publish it, and I had to publish it. I started my own publishing company, published it myself. But we won the Colby Award for the Outstanding Military Book, and one of the authors that was at the ceremony was Mark Bowden, who wrote Black Hawk Down, and he was a Philadelphia Inquirer reporter, and I was telling him some of these stories, and of course my co-author is a journalist, and he kept saying, that can't be true. Journalists will correct stories if they know they're false, and I'm saying, Mark, they don't. They won't. Well, I gave him a bunch of examples. He ended up writing a story in Brill's Content, but he called up these reporters about, you know, a particular story that I had been involved with them all in, and every one of them portrayed me as a jerk, and they weren't going to take any crap off me or some jerk calling us, telling us our story was bogus. And he said, well, did you check? We didn't have to check. We knew that man was a Vietnam veteran or, you know, had 2 Silver Stars, whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, it's a sad commentary on the media. But let's turn to PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. How did this enter the lexicon, and what's its linkage to the creation of false heroes?
Well, very few people realize this, even in the mental health profession, but right after the war, of course, you had all these the Vietnam Veterans Against the War organization. Of course, it was populated to a great extent by frauds, but they started this theme that the men coming home were psychologically damaged by the horrors of war and the immoral things that they had been required to do, killing women, raping women, killing children, this type of thing. And some of them set up these clinics, these storefront clinics, and you had a psychiatrist named Lifton who really bought into this, and they started pushing the fact that the government needed to treat these hundreds of thousands of Vietnam veterans. And they lobbied and they lobbied and they lobbied, and they got these clinics put off the campuses of the VA hospitals, and they hired Vietnam veterans to man them. But they didn't bother to do any checking of the background. Many of these guys would say they were Vietnam veteran counselors just to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they started feeding all these frauds into the VA. There have been tens of billions of dollars paid to fraudulent veterans that have gotten in the VA. I did a study while back with six psychiatrists in Charleston, VA, and the bottom line is we showed that only about 39% of the guys getting the post-traumatic stress had ever been exposed to combat. Many of them had not been in Vietnam, and some of them hadn't been in the military, period. And they were getting close to $40,000 a year tax-free inflation index for life.
And those weren't the only freebies that went along with it either.
Well, they, one of the things that's interesting is that the Congress beats up on the VA you know, hierarchy in terms of getting them to treat the patients and move them through. Well, every time they do that, there's less and less checking. And recently there was a guy running for the presidency of the Vietnam Veterans of America, and somebody took him to task, and it was proven that he was forging – he was a counselor in one of these vet centers. He was forging the papers to get guys into the VA. 70% of the guys that get into the VA come through a service rep of the VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and a bunch of them will forge the paperwork to get these guys in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the VA is tickled to death that they're basically already processed, so they don't have to, you know, have hands-on, and they just run the guy through. Most of the interviews now for post-traumatic stress don't last longer than 15 or 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't go through repeated comeback, you know, week after week after week, and then finally get a diagnosis. They get it usually right up front.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't get 100%, then they come back and keep whining about it until they get it from 30 to 50 to 70 to 100.
Well, we're going to take a break there on that note. We'll continue our conversation with our guest this week, B.G. Burkett, the co-author, really the author with the journalist Glenna Whitley, of Stolen Valor, How the Vietnam Generation Was Robbed of Its Heroes and Its History. And you're listening to Veterans Chronicles on the Radio America Network.
World War II.
The German news agency said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun.
Korea.
The armed invasion of the Republic of Korea by armed forces from Northern Korea constituted a breach of the peace.
Vietnam.
The curfew is in effect for the Saigon, Cholon, Jiadin area.
The Gulf War.
The skies over Baghdad have been illuminated. Bright flashes going off all over the sky.
A special thanks to veterans everywhere from the Radio America Network.
Veterans Chronicles is now available wherever you are.
Through your MP3 player.
Log on to www.radioamerica.org
and click on the podcasting icon.
Look for Veterans Chronicles. Then follow the information on your screen to subscribe to our podcast.
You can also find the Veterans Chronicles podcast on Apple iTunes.
The Veterans Chronicles podcast.
Now online
at radioamerica.org.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell. My guest this week is B.G. Burkett, who served in Vietnam in 1968 and 69. He's the author of the book, along with journalist Glenna Whitley, of Stolen Valor, How the Vietnam Generation Was Robbed of Its Heroes and History. Mr. Burkett, we were talking before the break about post-traumatic stress disorder and some of its ramifications and implications. What about the controversy over Agent Orange? Are there some, any similarities to the PSDD issue here?
Well, yeah, there are similarities, but there are also some differences. Agent Orange is connected to diseases that can be diagnosed, and pancreatic cancer, thyroid cancer, this type of thing. The problem is, though, again, the media got involved in this, and they did this story in the press about how this chemical was sprayed all over Vietnam and hundreds of thousands of GIs were dying from these cancers, et cetera, et cetera. Well, nobody bothered to look at the science. There has never been a single disease that has ever been scientifically conclusively connected to Agent Orange. And surprisingly, Agent Orange was not a new chemical developed for Vietnam. It was a standard defoliant that had been used for years in the farmlands of America, and it's currently still being used. it doesn't kill trees. You hear this bit about, oh, it wiped out millions of acres of trees. It does not kill hardwood trees. It interrupts the photosynthesis of leaves and causes the leaves to brown up and fall off, which obviously, if you're in a combat zone and they're ambushing you from foliage, that's a very great positive. There were two squadrons, Air Force squadrons, that sprayed the stuff in Vietnam, and there were somewhere less than 1,500 airmen that were in those squadrons during the entire war. They got drenched in the stuff. They had to load it. They had rubber bladders, huge rubber bladders inside the fuselage, and every time they would go out and spray, they're only spraying from a few hundred feet above the ground in formation, they would take fire. And those bladders would be hit, and they had bicycle-type patches to cover it. They would come back soaked in this stuff. I mean, they were exposed to thousands of times greater exposure than some GI on the ground. They've been a medical study since day one. They have no exaggerated health problems. I mean, their health is not any worse than anybody that didn't go to Vietnam collectively. And yet everybody just ignores that, and they, you know, keep pushing. And if you look at the diseases that have been added, they're always added by the president, and they're selectively added. And what it is, it's a political move. He's making some statement to the veterans. Oh, we're gonna support spina bifida among the children of Vietnam veterans, and everybody claps, and the veterans groups are, you know, hollering and yelling. There is no excess spina bifida among the children of Vietnam veterans. So, I mean, it's another gigantic scientific hoax.
Well, where's the Veterans Administration, the VA, in all of this? It seems to me, at least in some respects, they've just caved and abdicated a lot of responsibility under this pressure.
Well, you got to remember, they live and die by Congress, and 70-75% of Congress now have never served in the military. And these veterans groups lobby congressmen, and then they beat up on the VA. I've been working the last couple of years with the VA on fraud concerning post-traumatic stress. I mean, we've been putting one guy after the other in prison. But it's like emptying the ocean with a teacup, because they've only got about 100 investigators. And one of the head honchos of the investigative thing says, you know, we put about 100 of these guys in prison a month, and they're letting 1,000 of these frauds in the front door a day. The secretary of the VA did a study based on my book and based on the British Journal of Psychiatry article, and had him review the records of 2,100 veterans, roughly 100 in each VA district. And they found, and they didn't do anything just except look at their own procedures, and they found a failure rate of about 28%. These guys were getting diagnosed, and they'd never, you know, given in, on this is on post-traumatic stress, but they'd gotten diagnosed, and they never even said they had any of the symptoms. I mean, there'd been no indication he has any post-traumatic stress symptoms, and yet he got benefits. So the head of medicine complained. They double-checked the figures and said, oh, my God, it's 38%. So at that point, he ordered the review of 300,000 records of the individuals getting 100% disability. And immediately, Congress shut them down. They said you cannot review any record internal to the VA with the objective of possibly finding fraud unless you have proof of fraud before you examine the record.
Well, how can you have the proof if you can't examine the record?
Well, that's exactly the point.
The great catch-22. Just before the break coming up, what's your best estimate, if one is even possible, of the price to the taxpayer of all this?
Well, you know, let me tell you, just one individual. You take a Vietnam veteran, say they got this 10, 12, 15 years ago. Right now you get roughly $2,000, $2,400 a month from the VA at 100%. But you also get 100% diagnosis from the Social Security disability. They give you a half payment. So you're getting $3,600 a month, tax-free, inflation index for life. Also, though, at 100%, you're eligible for all the benefits of a military retiree, commissary, gas station, golf course, all this stuff, except you can't get medical care on the base.
Well, it all adds up to the billions and billions of dollars. We've got to stop right here. We'll continue our conversation with B.G. Burkett right after the break.
Veterans Chronicles is presented by the American Veteran Center, an educational foundation dedicated toward preserving the legacy of America's servicemen and servicewomen of all generations. The center is home to two organizations, the World War II Veterans Committee and the National Vietnam Veterans Committee, each working to tell the stories of their respective veterans. In addition to this program, the American Veterans Center is also the primary sponsor of the National Memorial Day Parade, held annually in Washington, D.C. For more information on the American Veterans Center and its programs, visit the center's website at www.americanveteranscenter.org or call 703-302-1012, 703-302-1012.
Heavy fighting is still raging.
3,639 wounded.
Red light, green light, and out, out. Get out.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing.
The brutal death march of Bataan.
Germany calling. Germany calling.
Right in the purest pace.
Let the air conditioner blow.
Each year for Harlem on parade.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network. Once again, Gene Pell.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell. Our guest this week is B.G. Burkett, who is the author, along with journalist Glenna Whitley, of the book Stolen Valor, How the Vietnam Generation Was Robbed of Its Heroes and Its History. Let's talk about the fraud itself. How do the perpetrators of these frauds go about it, and how easy is it for them to do it?
Well, if you come through, like I mentioned, the service rep, they'll basically, if you go to a VA vet center, they will get you basically into the VA system, and they're counseling you on your problems and everything else, and they will do a elementary diagnosis of post-traumatic stress there and then send the fellow up to the hospital. Well, at the VA hospital, the guy's already in their system now, and they don't do anything other than maybe check to see if he was in the military. Is he eligible for benefits? And a lot of the hospitals don't even do that. But then he gets taken to a health care professional, mental health, psychiatrist, psychologist, and they basically just go down a list of symptoms. You know, do you have any of these things? And they're, right now, I went in for a hearing problem not too long ago, and in six different episodes, somebody read me the symptoms for post-traumatic stress. Don't you have any of these?
Mm-hmm.
Insomnia. No, I don't have insomnia. You never have a sleepless night? Well, yeah, of course I have a sleepless night. Well, then you've got insomnia. That could be post-traumatic stress. And the one of the reasons the hospitals want this diagnosis is part of their budget is built upon the number of individuals that are getting disability among their patient count. A hospital that has the same number of patients as another hospital, and yet, you know, 80% of their patients have disability and the other one only has 20, then the one with the highest disability will get the most money. Well, if you give post-traumatic stress, these guys can't ever get better because they'll lose money, so they don't ever come back once they get, you know, beyond the bureaucracy and the few meetings they have to go to. So they get them 100% up front, and they'll get a allocation that can be very similar to a quadriplegic that needs 24-hour care. So all of the incentive is built around giving the diagnosis and handing out the money. And a Vietnam vet will have drawn about $1 million plus by the time he dies, and, you know, demographically. The Iraq guy who's getting the money now at age 22, 23, 24, they will break through probably close to $2 million over their lifetime.
Mm-hmm. What about the people who are coming up with these fraudulent medals and documentation to at least convince some people that they're entitled to wear them? How do they go about getting their records to reflect this?
Well, I work a lot with the FBI and the Justice Department, do a lot of cases with them. And one of the things in my lectures to them, and this surprises a lot of people, even if you get the official records, you go through Freedom of Information Act, or in their case, they, you know, the investigation, they can get it directly, 3-5% of all Vietnam-era records are forged. So it's in the official record, and they did that, you know, when and after they were in Vietnam or, you know, at their home base, because a company clerk for a case of beer would forge papers and stick them into your official personnel file. I've just recently filed a complaint against a three-star admiral, active duty. About a year plus ago, I had a Navy captain that the commandant of the Marine Corps had made an honorary Marine just before his retirement, and I got hold of the program of the ceremony, and I checked this guy's military record, and I did prove that he had forged much of the records for his medals that were in his official file. Marine Corps then hired me as a consultant for the investigation and the court-martial, and that guy went to prison. So much for his retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very, very easy to do.
Well, how difficult has it been for you to uncover the fraud, and how do you go about that?
Well, actually, that is the part that has always blown my mind. You know, I'm not never was an FBI agent or a cop or anything like that. All I ever did is one day when I was working on the Texas Memorial, we had a vagrant kill a police officer in downtown Dallas, and the headlines, Vietnam veteran goes berserk. And I was lamenting about how that was going to damage my fundraising, because here we go again, you know, crazy, drunked-up Vietnam veteran. And the guy at the archives, I was working with them to get the casualty figures, you know, what hometowns they were from and all that type of thing. He says, well, you can get a military record, you can get it under Freedom of Information Act. I didn't know that. And, of course, this guy, he had an arrest record and everything, so I was able to get some information on him. I sent for his record. He had gotten a psychological discharge in basic training. You know, he never even got out of basic training, went to Vietnam, and the press wouldn't correct the story. From that point on, I started checking every story. I've checked over 2,000 stories. Most of them are national press stories, 60 Minutes, 2020, Dateline. Of the ones I've checked, 75% of them are bogus.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad it is. But it is easy to check. You have to identify the guy by full name. You have to try to come up with a service number or some way to identify the guy specifically at the archives. But if you make a Freedom of Information request, you can get his military record. You can't get it all because much of it is protected by the Privacy Act, but you can get, you know, duty assignments, decorations earned, dates of service, you know, dates of rank, all the things you would need to know exactly what his background was in the military.
And as far as the medals themselves are concerned, you talk about the Purple Market, Purple Heart Flea Market. I guess it's very easy either through flea markets or through magazines where you can order these things to get hold of them, including a Medal of Honor.
Well, the Medal of Honor has been tightened up pretty good for the last many years. But, you know, Mitchell Page was a World War II vet, Marine Medal of Honor recipient. I used to work with him. He's since died. But from the time he got home from the war, he started checking Medal of Honor recipients, and over his lifetime, he exposed somewhere over 2,000 individuals that had Medals of Honor, claiming that, you know, they'd won them in combat. It was very easy even to get a Medal of Honor. Matter of fact, I did a 2020 piece, and as part of the program, the producers went out and bought all of these medals, including the Medal of Honor, to just show the public how easy it was to buy these things.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, we got the Stolen Valor Act passed, which makes it a felony not only to wear these medals that you didn't earn, but to claim them, meaning that you put it on a resume or you say it in an interview or political campaign or whatever it is. It is a felony, and you can go to jail for it.
Mm-hmm.
That was Congressman Salazar of Colorado introduced that. Matter of fact, he had me come up and do the press conference with him in Washington when he introduced it.
Mm-hmm. In general, if there is such a thing as in general here, what kind of reaction do you find from the people who are exposed? Is there denial? Do they still maintain they're entitled to these things? Do they fade away or what?
Sometimes I get threats, but usually there's denial. I mean, they very rarely will apologize and say, yes, I did it, et cetera. And part of it is, they build up a life with their associates, their family. I've had some of these guys. Well, I'll give you another example of that. I used to check the obituaries of World War II veterans. Of course, there are, you know, just too many of them now. But half of the obituaries in the paper are completely bogus. these guys made it up at some point, and yet their families, their wives, their kids totally believe it. And it, you know, I've worked a lot with these prosecutors, and I'll tell these guys, I said, a lot of these fellows will plea bargain. They'll take a prison sentence just on the pure threat that you're going to expose them to their family and their kids, that they're lying about this whole 30-year episode. And more often than not, that's exactly what happened. Just recently had a guy took a 10-year sentence rather than have it exposed.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting right there. Another theme in the book you bring up more than once is the difficulty, at least at the time, of getting anybody to talk about the achievements of so many hundreds of thousands of people who served there across the board, achievements after they came back, some in continued military service itself, in politics and business and the arts. We've had a number of ex-POWs on this program, including Bud Day and Orson Swindle and Everett Alvarez. And I always am struck in talking to these people about not only did they endure what an ordeal that most men simply could not, in my opinion, but they came back and made exceptional careers for themselves after they got out of the military, as though they had, you know, been forged with some kind of steel, and certainly a camaraderie that was required of them in order to survive while they were in Hanoi and other places. So you see any of that changing now?
Well, it's a difficult thing because you've got all of this literature out there. You've got all of these books, the falsehoods, and nobody's going to take them off the shelf and burn them. You know, so I do one book, and it's up there for 100 years, but it's in there with the others that are bogus.
And the movies.
And the movies. Even the POW situation. There were only about 500 of those guys. There were a little over 600 came home. There were probably right around 500 of them still alive, and I know a lot of them. Bud Day and the rest of those guys you just named. You're right. They went on with successful careers in the military and elsewhere. They've been in a health study program since day one. Their mental health is better than pilots that did not go to Vietnam, let alone were POWs. And yet, I'm fully convinced inside the VA, there are about 5,000 individuals getting disability, mostly for post-traumatic stress because, quote, they were POWs in Vietnam. The other thing, this weekend, Tuskegee Airmen are having their national get-together here in town, and I've been invited to, as a guest there to be there. And there's another prime example, the black community. You listen, Dallas Morning News had a little clip on this the other day about how the vast majority of men who served in Vietnam were from the minorities and the uneducated and the poverty-stricken, that they couldn't avoid the war. That's just blatantly false. The blacks suffered slightly less casualties than they were represented in the draft age pool. They didn't get drafted at any different rate than the whites did. In addition, 75% of them served in Vietnam were volunteers. They served for the same patriotic reason everybody else did, and that was the same volunteer rate as the whites. Thousands of black officers, college-educated officers, served in Vietnam. 300 of those men have gone on to become admirals and generals of the various armed services of America. 20 Medal of Honor recipients, almost 100 Distinguished Service Crosses, dozens of Air Force Crosses, Navy Crosses. Nobody knows it. I mean, not the white community, not even the black community.
Well, we've got a couple of minutes left. Let me ask you this. I mean, this book came out about 8 years ago, and you have continued to work on this. What's changed in those 8 years? Is the situation worse than you even thought when you started all this?
Well, no, it is worse. But what I've done is energize Vietnam veterans themselves to stand up. And that's one reason why you're seeing more of these frauds exposed, because people are now aware of the problem. You've got Bud Day is running a foundation right now called the Vietnam Veterans Legacy Foundation, and its sole purpose is to tell the truth. I'm working with a bunch of American airline pilots that have a charity-type educational thing sponsored by American to teach the truth and patriotism in schools. So there are a lot of things going on that are, you know, trying to change history, but it's very hard to correct 30, 40 years of total falsehood.
Well, I'm sure it is, and as you have pointed out, we may not even be close to the iceberg, only the tip in terms of how much fraud there has been.
No, it's. I mean, I get involved in a lot of criminal cases. That's where this comes into play, because a lot of these criminals, part of their fraud is claiming they're a hero. That's how they were able to scam the people out of their money or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second they get caught, they start complaining they got post-traumatic stress. You know.
Well,
and I can come testify and say, well, if he got post-traumatic stress, it must have been while he was a cook at Columbus Air Force Base, Mississippi, because that's the only place he served.
Okay. Well, thanks again. Thank you so much. Fascinating stuff, and good luck with the continued pursuit of these people. My guest this week has been B.G. Burkett, a Vietnam veteran and author, with journalist Glenna Whitley, of Stolen Valor, How the Vietnam Generation Was Robbed of Its Heroes and Its History. Coming up next, our weekly World War II Chronicle and a salute to an American military hero.
This is the Radio America Network.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
We remember 24 hours a day.
We study the news and history.
We assemble information. We speak out.
And we listen to you.
And we don't forget that every pleasant minute of this freedom we owe to those who defend it.
So, here's to life.
The freedom of conscience.
And liberty.
Thank God Almighty!
And the pursuit of happiness.